Ho, 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 little girl. What's your name?
Can I pull your beard?
Ho, ho, no! What do you want for Christmas?
I don't know, a spotted elephant, and a choo-choo with square wheels on the caboose, and a water pistol that shoots jelly, and a bird that swims, and a cowboy who rides an ostrich, and a boat that can't stay afloat.
That's quite a list you got there, little girl.
Most of all, I want all of my favorite geeky Christian podcasts that engage faith and pop culture to do a Christmas crossover for the holidays.
Well, let me make a list, and check it twice. A Christmas crossover for 2015 would probably consist of Strangers and Aliens at StrangersandAliens.com, Geekly Yoked at GeeklyYoked.com, Helix Reviews at Facebook.com/HelixReviews, The Spirit Blade Underground Podcast at SpiritBlade.com, Dorkness to Light at DorknessToLight.blogspot.com, The Untold Podcast at UntoldPodcast.com, Geek This at GeekThisPodcast.com, and Voices in My Head at RickLeeJames.com/podcast. Ho, ho, ho!
That's it!
And of course, a crossover like that would need some sort of nexus. Links to all these podcasts can be found at CrossoverNexus.com! Well, there you go, little girl. Anything else you want?
I want an official Red Ryder Carbine Action 200 Shot Range Model Air Rifle.
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Geekly Yoked is a proud member of the Crossover Nexus. To find more blogs and podcasts about the intersection of faith and pop culture, check out CrossoverNexus.com. Tell them Bilbo sent you.
So many ways to say I love you in different languages across the land. You haven't heard them all, so I'll tell you as only a true geek can.
Hello, and welcome to Geekly Yoked, the world's best married Christian geek podcast. As always, I'm Lehman Kessler.
And I'm Rachel Kessler.
That's Mother Rachel Kessler.
I am a priest in the Episcopal Church and the chaplain at Kenyon College.
And I am a viral parenting sensation in Finland.
Like you do.
And we're both huge nerds.
We are. That's right. I was like, there's something I usually say that I didn't say. Because I have to figure out what my intro is now that I'm not. I used to be a priest in the Anglican Church of Canada, and now I'm like in this strange nebulous region of like I haven't become an Episcopal priest yet because like I haven't gotten grilled and examined by my bishop on the doctrine and history of the Episcopal Church, which is apparently a thing I have to go through in the next 6 months. But like I'm a chaplain, and I don't really know what I am.
Aside from a huge dork?
I am a huge nerd. Oh, with a PhD in medieval studies, which makes me a giant dork. That's my thing.
Although, really, you were a dork before you had that PhD.
Well, no, it's true. But the fact that I pursued a PhD in medieval studies does sort of, like, exemplify the dorkiness.
What was the rule in the medieval program? Like, everyone understood that the reason you got into medieval studies was because you wanted to be a hobbit, but weren't allowed.
But you just couldn't say that.
Right.
Like, it's kind of this, like, understood thing, mm-hmm. but you do not speak it.
Right. The love of hobbits that dare not speak its name.
Pretty much.
I see. Welcome, everyone, to our special Nexus crossover holiday extravaganza! As you heard from our modified intro, this is part of a big crossover
get-together,
event, what have you.
Everything has to be events these days.
It's all about events. Well, it was making fun, I think, of the fact that comic books were all, like, super eventy and,
right.
like, you know, had giant crossovers. I think Ben was meaning to kind of parody that. This time around, we're all of us kind of coming together in a kind of, I don't know, family, Christmassy sort of way, just to sort of celebrate and share a little bit about ourselves. Now, Rachel, you've actually been on these other podcasts. You were on
Stranger. So
I don't think I was ever on Stranger.
Well, I was on Strangers and Aliens, but you've done more of like the crossover when we've had like
the round tables.
The round tables, yeah.
I think we did the same number. I think
did we each do one?
I think I did the first one, which was about adaptations, and then you did the monsters?
Yeah, which was a strange choice of topics for me to have stepped in on. I'm not a horror fan.
No, you are not. But we've also, we've had folks on our program.
Mm-hmm.
We've had Matt on.
Well, Matt and Ben was on ours.
Oh, that's right, because we had Ben on for our Studio Ghibli.
So Matt Anderson of the Sci-Fi Christian and Ben Avery of Strangers and Aliens.
That's right. So we're not, you know, a completely sort of incestuous crowd always sort of guesting on each other, but we do like to kind of, you know, pepper the year.
And I was on the Storyman as well.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
And you went on to Ben Avery's to talk.
But that's why I was on Strangers and Aliens.
Oh, yes.
That was
yes.
the first thing we said.
Yes. So we'll have links to all of that and links.
Check them all out. Woo!
Links to the crossover stuff. Because yeah, it's that time of year where we sort of sit back and reflect and think about all the fun that we've had. And so this is going to be a little bit of a look back on 2015 in geekliness with...
This is our combined, like, kind of Thanksgiving / end of the year retrospective.
Yeah, Geeksgiving.
Geeksgiving. Sans Star Wars.
Well...
Stay tuned next time for the in-depth Force Awakens extravaganza!
Well, you know what? Let's actually start with that. Because
are we starting with that?
Even before... Because I knew we weren't going to have seen Star Wars by the time we talked about it. But I want to talk about the anticipation of Star Wars that's been going on, right? Because
how it compares to The Phantom Menace?
Well,
or that the film that dare not speak its name?
Well, that's everything's... We can't just keep quoting Oscar Wilde, Rachel.
What was I quoting Oscar Wilde?
Love that dare not speak its name? I'm pretty sure that was him.
Really?
Yes. I'm pretty sure.
Interesting.
Yes. You know, what with all the famous lawsuit over homosexuality and whatnot?
Right.
Did you not see the Stephen Fry movie?
I don't think I did.
It was pretty good. They had Jude Law being his lover, and he was the worst.
I do enjoy Jude Law.
When he's being the
well,
worst?
Well, he's just very good at it.
It's so true. So that's our little history lesson.
Okay.
About where these quotes come from.
Anyway, do we want to compare the anticipation for The Force Awakens to The Phantom Menace?
Sort of. Well, I want to talk about that anticipation because I'm actually like...
But I have trust in J.J. Abrams.
Well, we have trust in J.J. Abrams or not.
I actually do. I do have trust in J.J. Abrams.
I'm a little put out by the Wrath of Khan remake that he did.
Okay, that's true.
So I do not think he is a bulletproof
No, but I generally have a vague confidence in him.
But what I want to...
And the Wrath of Khan remake was not bad, per se. It just...
It was not good, per se.
It was entertaining.
Simon Pegg running down a hallway was entertaining.
Well.
But here's the thing. Like, I have seen... I've been seeing everyone get very, very excited for it. And then I've seen sort of half my wall... poo-pooing that excitement or sort of, you know, noting that people were just excited for just the same amount of information and just the same reasons for Phantom Menace, and also pointing to, and I must say, now that we have regular American television that I could turn on, the really gross
gross advertising is gross.
Like, I think the Time Warner or Verizon ad where, you know, R2 has got to download the Death Star plans.
That's the worst one.
But has this got enough bandwidth? And has it got enough internet speed to do it? It's just, oof.
Is that the fault of Star Wars, though, or of all the companies buying into Star Wars?
Oh, well, I mean, these people have to agree to license all this stuff out, right? I mean, and I, you know, and the fact is, it's a giant cash cow, and it's Disney involved with it, and Disney is a giant just cash machine. But yeah, that's, I want to kind of get into that because I like the anticipation. I like the excitement. I think that the sort of cynical, you know, you were just this excited about Phantom Menace, even if it's as bad as Phantom Menace, I don't think we lose anything by being excited. I mean, you can say, you're throwing your money, you know, you're throwing your money away.
But we all know we're going to go see it.
Well, and that's...
I mean, that was the thing. I remember saying that before...
Attack of the Clones?
No, what's the one after? Revenge of the Sith. Yes, I've tried to block it. But I remember
that we saw three times in theater.
I know. I remember sitting on this very campus of Kenyon College.
Indeed.
And saying, we all know this movie is going to be... Actually, it might have actually been Attack of the Clones, not I think it was actually my.
Revenge was that was the year we graduated.
I know it was the year after we graduated.
Oh, was it? Was it 2005?
I think it was because we were here visiting for graduation, and I think that was when we went to go see it
after seeing possibly David Foster Wallace.
Before seeing David Foster Wallace, I'm not really sure.
Okay.
All I know is that before one of those two movies, I just remember saying, we all know that this is going to be terrible, and yet we are... I think it was actually sitting in the midnight showing for either Attack of the Clones or Revenge of the Sith, and just saying, you know, this is a theater in Columbus that is just packed full. Every single screen is showing the same movie as a bunch of nerds who have all shilled out money to be here. And we all know this movie is going to be terrible.
Yeah.
And George Lucas has won.
And he did, yeah. And so I guess it's a question, then, are the friends of mine who are either mocking the enthusiasm of everyone else or pointing out which is what a cynical cash grab these movies are, and people who have invested all of their energies and all of their sort of sense of self into this, are they right? Are they right that people have essentially been duped and allowed themselves to be duped? I'm really enjoying our friend Carlos has been watching. Apparently, there's this new despecialized edition of Star Wars where they've taken all the super high defness of Star Wars, but they've scrubbed everything back.
But that's what we all wanted.
Well, precisely.
Does it exist now?
It does exist
on the DVDs.
It exists on the internet and can be downloaded and is in a dubious legal status.
Disney has not produced it.
Oh no!
How did I miss this?
No! This is a fan made. This is a fan made thing.
Oh, okay.
Sort of like that super edit that where they went through and they like made Star Wars just more like they just tightened the editing and added more TIE fighters and made it seem a bit more intense. It's like that. It's a fan project, but it's a big, long thing. Anyway, he's been watching that and sort of pointing out, like, these things are terrible. Like all this, like, sister kissing and Darth Vader torturing his daughter with a gynobot, as you referred to it. And, yeah, so is Star Wars fandom, like, is it, you know, what is there that's actually has heart? Or is it just a really crass, cynical money machine?
Wait, are you saying Star Wars doesn't have heart?
That's what I'm asking. Like what, and looking
forward. It could be horrible and have, like, I mean, all the stuff that Carlos says about it could be true, but it could still have heart. I don't feel like it being terrible is not equivalent to not having heart. The prequels didn't have heart. The original trilogy, for whatever you want to say about it, it had heart.
It had Irving Kirshner.
Yes.
And did you watch the full interview with Carrie Fisher?
I did.
All right, so let's talk about that.
Wait, the full interview or just the one of her on Good Morning America?
That's the one I'm talking
about.
Yes,
I watched that.
So what do you have to say about that? Because that was a pretty epic.
It was amazing.
I caught the first bit of it with her talking about her dog.
Her talking about her dog. Okay, so we should put a link to this in the show notes because it was a delightful interview with Carrie Fisher. And, you know, the woman interviewing her on Good Morning America was like, what made you want to go back to this role? And Carrie Fisher was like, they were paying me. It was a job. I am a woman over 40 in Hollywood. Let's be real. And it was just so refreshingly like blunt. And I don't know how many drugs she was on or if that's just her, but it was delightful.
All right. Okay. So I guess you sound very much like you are on the side that the enthusiasm is warranted and merited.
I don't know if I go that. Like, I mean, it's... I love Star Wars. Star Wars is a huge... Like, Star Wars is just one of those things that has always been part of my life. And sort of like the church has always been part of my life, but my faith has grown and evolved and changed dramatically over the course of my life.
Okay.
Whereas Star Wars is like this incredible constant of my life. And I feel like in a way Star Wars is the only constant of my life.
All right. That's fair. I'll take it.
And I don't think that's overstating the reality. Like that in all my life, Star Wars and my feelings about Star Wars and my thoughts on Star Wars have remained fairly consistent.
A through line,
and it has always been there. And given how much fluctuation has been in my life, that is like, it is a constant for me. And so Star Wars is something that I have a deep and profound emotional attachment to. And maybe it's just that I've been so ridiculously busy that I just don't have the time to and part of it is that I want to go into this movie without a lot of baggage.
Yeah.
Sort of like how you were almost avoiding any excitement of the first Lord of the Rings movie when it came out.
That's true.
I mean, I remember like all of us, again, on this very campus, all of us were like on our hall, were just like freaking out about
downloading
the Fellowship
the
of
wallpapers.
The Rings. And that was the only hype you allowed yourself was a little Hobbiton.
That's right.
Wallpaper on your computer. And you were just trying to like stay out of it because you were too invested and didn't want yourself to get too hyped up. And that's how I kind of feel about this. Like, I just want to go in and be surprised and like, and just let it be whatever it's going to be. So I certainly am not on the don't get hyped up. We were burned by Phantom Menace. It's all just a corporate machine, cynical, blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm not on that side, but like, my enthusiasm is also not playing out and wanting to see every promo over and over again and like
that, well, and I'm
read every interview.
Likewise, I'm not really going crazy and like tracking down the European trailers in order to get like the three extra stills.
Yeah.
And I also I think there's a degree of excitement to be allowed, which is that J.J. Abrams, I think, is a true believer. I think he is a giant nerd.
Well, and I think the argument is that what the criticism people make of, like, I liked especially the first Star Trek movie quite a lot.
Yeah.
But the argument people make is that he made a Star Wars movie, not a Star Trek movie.
Okay.
And that's like, if he's anything, like, I do trust him with this material. Like, I know he's not perfect, but I feel like he's solid.
Yeah.
And he's not George Lucas. Whatever you want to say about Star Trek Into Darkness, it was not The Phantom Menace. It was not terrible.
Oh, Phantom Menace. Oh, so much shattered dreams, but you still...
And whatever else we have, we'll have a John Williams score, and even the like, even the Phantom Menace. If you just like watch the Duel of the Fates music video over and over again, you can fool yourself into thinking that that's a bad.
But has John Williams actually like made any new music since 1998?
Does it matter?
Been like rehashing it remixing it?
He has like three scores that he just used, but it doesn't matter. They're great.
I remember the Hook soundtrack was on my iPod and it started playing, and Lucas and Lucas was like, this sounds really, really familiar. And I said, oh yeah, this is the new Harry Potter soundtrack. He's like, what? That's awful. That's because this sounds just like the Hook theme. Like, I know. Yeah, it does sound. And then like the pirate music, you know, bum, 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 bum. Oh, and here's the Slytherin theme. What? The amount of fun I had pranking poor Lucas. So that's Star Wars, and that's our anticipation. There'll be more on that. I like how in our episode not about Star Wars, we spent
15 minutes talking about Star Wars.
So let's just go back and forth about things that have happened this year that we've enjoyed, that we feel merit being in an annual roundup.
In a festive, merry, and bright.
Indeed.
You go first, because I've suddenly drawn a blank.
Hannibal ended.
Hannibal did end.
Speaking of festive brightness.
But that's sad.
But it ended in such a beautiful way,
it did,
right?
It did. That's true.
It gave us wonderful closure while still, like, opening the door for, like, you know, leaving the door open for some strange thing down the road. And...
That last scene was so good.
Well, the second to last
scene. Penultimate scene, yes. Well, the last scene was... something,
but no, the final fight sequence was truly a thing of beauty and just a work of art, and with the ending of it, we get to look forward to Brian Fuller bringing his magic
to American gods. Yeah
Seeing all the delightful tweets of him location hunting on carousels in strange abandoned amusement parks.
I need to follow him on Twitter.
So I think Hannibal ending in a satisfying way and giving us one season that almost felt like two seasons worth of material, or at least emotional material, that I think was definitely something that I'm willing to give some geeks giving for.
Right. I'll throw out there Killjoys.
Oh, yes, that's right. This is not that I've been participating in.
No, and I mean, it wasn't fantastic, but this was the sci-fi... original space opera bounty hunters adventure.
Pew pew.
Pew 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 pew. It felt kind of Firefly-ish in spirit, if not like with the Joss Whedon punchiness.
Oh, okay.
But like I don't think the characters were quite as nuanced. But
fair enough.
But I felt like it was a compelling. It gave us a compelling world. The last arc of episodes was pretty interesting. You have a dynamic female woman of color in the center of the show. And some other really interesting female characters. Good adventure. I very much enjoyed it. I'm glad it got picked up for a second season.
Oh,
and
nice.
it made me feel like I was in 2005 again when I watch it, which is always nice.
I'm going to give some geek giving for the fact that I had a fun, short but incredibly silly Dungeons and Dragons game with my folks that I met through my brother and me and Adventure Zone crowd. These guys were part of a my brother and me fan group, and they were looking for Toronto gamers, and we came together and we were going to have a serious game, but that never quite panned out so well because of our schedules. But we were, about a core of four of us were able to get together to play a ridiculous game of Dungeons and Dragons, which did involve talking horses eventually that were named after the McElroys.
And very appropriate.
Fighting Dracula and generally having a good, silly time. And that was nice. It was nice. I have not been able to roll dice and do role play gaming in a solid way for some time. You know, I've kind of, in the last few years, I've swapped over to board gaming just because it's easier to get, you know, four random people together as opposed to the same four people together every time. But this was a nice kind of last bit of gaming to accomplish while in Toronto, where I did a lot of gaming, you know? I mean, I showed up. I had a gaming group before I arrived in Toronto, right? You know?
Yeah.
You know, the guys that you were gaming with when you were there before I showed up. And then, like, I don't know. That's been my way of connecting with folks, and I'm excited to sort of see that potentially happening here in Kenyon. We'll see what adult life and babies allow. But yes, that is something I am thankful for.
I will go with Saga. I can't remember if we've talked about Saga.
I feel like it's come up.
And
yeah.
I know that it's not a thing that was new this year, but it was new to me.
And to me.
In discovering it. But this is the story of, like, in some ways it's a classic people, like romance between two people from warring factions, like long-standing warring factions.
Yeah.
But it's much more than that. Like, it's, well, two people and they have a child, so it's like two new parents on the run with their infant child, with like the various people that are out hunting for them.
Well, and there's a sort of fantasy sci-fi
quality
to it. Yeah,
super fantasy sci-fi quality to it.
But also very adult themes as well.
Very adult theme, but just the whole parenting aspect. Like, it's just, there's so many levels that it works on.
That is true.
And it's, like, funny and dark and moving, and it's just, it's really well done. Brian K. Vaughan hardly ever misses.
Yeah. No, it is good stuff. And it's this interesting interplay of the incredibly fantastical. You've got, you know, strange alien races that where they have like robots with televisions for heads. But then there's just a lot of sort of mundane detail worked in and pieces of just real life thrown in that is just a nice juxtaposition. And it works very well. Like, I've seen folks try to do, like, I think the Fables sort of tried to sort of
but
do
Fables
that.
But Fables was too dark.
Well, Fables was too dark and also had problematic, a lot of things going weird for it. This is dark.
It is dark, but, well, okay, this goes back to the, I know we're I'm going to skip our little format here, but this goes to the Jessica Jones thing.
All right. So.
And things that are, so I will put Jessica Jones on the something I'm thankful for this year.
And I am very surprised by that because, Rachel, you saw one episode of Daredevil and told me it was too dark, and we are now.
So I watched,
like,
two episodes of Daredevil. I watched,
like,
two episodes of Daredevil.
Eight traumatic episodes into Jessica Jones, and how what do you have to say for yourself?
I like like it. So this is the thing about like the dark, the things that I can't deal with because they're too dark versus the things that have a darkness to them that I enjoy. Because people don't understand how I can watch Hannibal and love it.
I understand.
So why am I able to watch Hannibal?
Because it's beautiful.
Yes, okay. And so my issue with Daredevil, because I was thinking about this, and there's two things. And one, my issue with Daredevil was that a huge part of the darkness in Daredevil was in Daredevil himself.
Okay.
That he was a very violent character.
Yes.
And he, I felt like, at least in what I saw of Daredevil, it was his battling his own demons.
Mm.
Right? And wrestling with the darkness within himself and just doing really violent things. And he was sort of a hero, but also really messed up.
Okay.
And I feel like what's interesting in, like, there is mega trauma in Jessica Jones.
Dude, I'm traumatized by Jessica Jones.
But it's trauma that is perpetrated by an incredibly, an unambiguously evil man.
Yes.
There is nothing ambiguous about Kilgrave. He is Hannibal.
Yes.
He is purely evil. Jessica Jones is a complicated character, right? And what I like about Jessica Jones is I think you can make an argument that she is not nice, but she is good.
Okay.
Right? There's nothing nice. There is nothing polished, all-American, apple pie-eating Clark Kentish about Jessica Jones.
Truth.
But she is good.
She is.
Despite her own inclinations, she cares about other people and wants to do right by them. She, at the point we are at, this is mild spoilers, okay, for anyone who is, so just skip ahead like 30 seconds. The point that we are in, about 8 or 9 episodes in, is that she could have killed Kilgrave.
Many times.
Many times, but she won't do it because she wants to get one of his other, she wants to prove the innocence of one of his other victims.
Yes.
Right? And so that's not darkness. That's goodness.
Yeah.
And so at least, and it's the same thing. I can deal with Hannibal because in the world of Hannibal, there are absolutes of good and evil.
Yes. Fair. No, that is true.
Hannibal is evil. And again, he is evil because what he does is a corruption of beauty. There's incredible evil and grotesqueness in the world of Hannibal, but it is also a world that has beauty and goodness. That is unambiguously good and beautiful. And again, with Jessica Jones, there is a goodness that we see in the character of Jessica Jones. There is a goodness in that world that Kilgrave distorts. And so it's hard to watch. It is very traumatic to see the things that he makes other people do.
Oof.
But like, I don't know. Maybe somehow it's like being a priest, like I'm not sheltered from the evils of people's pain.
Yes.
Like
no,
I have to on a level be able to deal with the traumatic things in Jessica Jones shows us like we see people in pain and we see people suffering because terrible things are being done to them. But it's not a darkness that is. It's not this moral existential darkness of, like, what is goodness and like, battling evil within ourselves.
Okay, yeah.
Right? And that's what gets me about. That's what I found too dark in Daredevil. Not just that it was really, really violent, but that I wasn't finding goodness or light in that world.
It was a lot of gray.
Yeah.
Okay.
Whereas I feel like there is goodness and light in Jessica Jones, and I want to keep watching it because I want to see her win. Right? And I don't know any spoilers, but the vague sense I have gotten from the internet is that there will be some, like, comeuppance.
Satisfaction.
And satisfaction. Also, David Tennant is just ridiculously good and charismatic.
Yeah.
Right? Like, give me a good, charismatic villain.
Who doesn't see himself as a villain.
Who does not, I mean, that's the classic thing, right? Is a villain who does not understand why he's a villain.
Oh, well, except, it's funny, to go back to Hannibal, I think in some ways Hannibal knew he was a villain.
He knew he was a monster. Yeah, he just embraced it.
And there was a charm in that, there was an honesty in that was really fascinating and charming in its own way.
Yeah.
So, well, once we finish Jessica Jones, maybe we might come back and discuss that a bit further. But you had a great line in there talking about how she's not nice, but she's good. And that, of course, immediately got stuck in my head. You're not good. You're not bad. Oh, you're just nice. Which, of course, was in Into the Woods, which we saw right at the start of the year. And that was, like, for most of 2015, the only movie I'd seen in theaters. I'm pretty sure. I think it was that, and then maybe I saw Avengers 2.
Oh, I did not see Avengers 2.
You didn't miss much.
I'm just tired of superheroes. I'm not thankful for superheroes. Can I throw that out?
You may throw that out.
I'm not. I'm just,
But superheroes gave you Jessica Jones?
I know, but she's super. But that's a more interesting, again, it's a more interesting superhero story.
There's no spandex?
Well, there's no spandex, and the superhero-ness is almost like ancillary to the actual story they're telling, right?
That's true.
The superhero aspects of Jessica Jones give them a vehicle to explore complicated things around, like, issues of rape and consent and what that does to a person. And, like, I mean, it's really much more a story about being a survivor. Not that I know what, I mean, I don't want to presume and take on those narratives, but it is a story of what presumably it would be like to be a survivor.
Yeah.
Of like rape, especially in the context of an abusive relationship.
Yeah.
Like,
where you question your own sanity.
Where you question your own sanity and gaslighting and all of that stuff. Like, it's just, I think has a really fascinating gender implications. And I think Kilgrave's character of not understanding the concept of consent is a very, like, I think it opens up a really important conversation that's happening around us right now. And think that's really, I think it's a very interesting show that uses superhero stuff to be able to tell a more interesting story. But I'm just tired of the same story being told. And I want stories told in other, like, my issue with superheroes is I want stories told in other places. It's why I like Guardians of the Galaxy. It was a superhero movie, but it was set somewhere else.
Yes.
And I want to go other places.
Like Into the Woods.
Yes, sorry. More about Into the Woods?
Well, we talked about Into the Woods, and then it turned into a bit of a Jessica Jones return.
Well, you started it!
I did.
You started it. You referenced Avengers 2.
I did reference Avengers 2. But no, Into the Woods was, for most of 2015, the only movie I had seen in my wonderful new parenting existence. And it was just absolutely delightful. Like, it was just one of the best musical movies I had seen. I felt they did a wonderful job capturing not just Into the Woods sort of musical, you know, sense of what it is, but just as any kind of musical, I felt it did a wonderful job. You know, the stunt casting was not terrible. Johnny Depp, you know, tried but couldn't ruin this movie. And
well, he was contained.
Yes, he was contained to one nice little role. And we got to see Chris Pine.
In fact, I like kind of just forgot that he was in the movie altogether, possibly because I deleted his song from my
The playlist.
Like, so I just never listened to it.
Oh, but see, I like Hello, Little Girl. But I do like the original, like the sort of the original Broadway Hello, Little Girl. His kind of slithery version is less interesting. But Chris Pine being
Pine was amazing.
Being even more Shatnerian than great. As Kirk.
Oh, it was awesome.
That was a thing of beauty. That was I can just watch agony again and again and again.
Yeah.
If Amanda just didn't look on confusedly when I did that.
Anything else you want to talk about?
With that happened in 2015?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we're back in America. We have access to a lot more television.
We do. I need to catch up on Sleepy Hollow, man. I was so excited to have Hulu, and then I got distracted by, like, Jessica Jones.
Oh, that's right.
And the Great British Baking Show!
Does that count?
Yes!
As a geek thing?
It's delightful. How many... It has to be slightly geeky to have all of its, like... It's dirty... pun-based innuendos with pastries.
There are a lot of pastry-based
innuendos,
it has to be said. This is a strange show.
It's delightful. It's the best.
It's...
I just want more of it to be on Netflix.
Yes, that is true. You are trapped by the single season. I mean, reality television has done some weird things and gone into some strange places, but this definitely is breaking the format enough And that it's very refreshing, regardless of what its actual subject matter of.
How is it breaking the format?
Just there's not the same amount of negativity.
The sort of sense
of competition is different. They're not just doing the same.
Well, they don't actually win any. Apparently, in the American version, they're trying to do. There actually is a cash prize at the end.
Well,
but again, I like the fact that there's nothing at stake other than just
reputation.
Yeah, or like getting to win your little like, cake plate with the Great British Baking Show on it.
Yes. But no, it doesn't have that. Like, I think about like if the Jim Henson Creature Shop Challenge had managed to capture some of just the joy of this.
That the Jim Henson Creature Shop. I feel like what was frustrating is the Jim Henson Creature Shop Challenge had the potential to have that joy, because I think what works on the Great British Baking Show is that the people all kind of like each other, right?
Yeah.
They're actually kind of helping each other out to a degree, and there's this sense of camaraderie among them, even though they're competing against each other.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like that was happening on the Jim Henson Creature Show, too.
It was.
Like, because you just had a bunch of techie nerds. right? And, like, you couldn't cast it based purely on personality because these people actually had to be able to do a thing. Right? And so that was fantastic. And they also had to collaborate on so many projects, right? So they had to work together. But you could tell that the people behind the scenes were still trying to drum up that drama. And they still played all the same jokes or all the same tricks of like, we're going to wait 3 commercial breaks until we tell you who's getting cut this week. And everything was just very over dramatized.
Zooming in on each person.
And I feel like if they had somehow figured out what the Great British Baking Show had figured out, which is just this whimsical, bad pastry-based innuendos.
and it has enough drama, but it also doesn't need to be so overly laden with drama because it's baking. And I feel like the same thing could be said about, you know, creating.
We're going to have you make a Victoria sponge.
There was a lot of sponges.
Apparently, I got the Jewish chaplain here.
Oh, yes.
My Jewish buddy.
Yeah.
I had suggested this show to him, and he was very amused to hear them making puds, self-saucing puds. And so I think that's the British baking show is puds and sponges, lots of sponges.
Puds and sponges. since we're already in England, we might as well. We just finished talking about Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, but that was something that was cool. One of the more fun viewing experiences of this year. And we just talked about it, so I don't think we need to go into further detail about it. It's making me excited about American Gods in a weird sort of way, like Gaiman-esque television. I'm thankful for all the various fun conventions that I got to go to this year that I dragged you and Amanda to.
Only one.
But I had a lot of fun with that, and I had a lot of fun seeing where Lovecraft has kind of gone this year. I was just having a Google Chat interview with a professor at the Rhode Island School of Design earlier today, talking about being Lovecraft and performing a little bit as Lovecraft for his students. And I met him going to one of these bizarre conventions, and I don't know, I'm keen to see sort of where things go from that, but it's been a good year for Lovecraft. Well, it's been a weird year for Lovecraft in general. It's been a good year for me as Lovecraft.
Right. Speaking of good years, it's kind of astounding to be ending 2015 here in Kenyon.
Dude.
I mean, this was not on the radar for us at all at the start of the year.
That is very true. And well, I mean, it's strange to be back.
It is really strange. It's surreal.
It's familiar.
But not too familiar.
Precisely.
Excellent. Yeah, I mean, it's very bizarre. Like, it's a place that feel like it's the thing that's totally right, but it was not foreseen.
No.
And I think it's fair to say that I miss Canada and Toronto quite a lot, but we are incredibly happy to be here.
Yeah.
Really, in terms of things that we're thankful for.
Especially now that all the boxes have been...
The boxes are gone, which is good, and we're feeling more moved in and settled, but this is just, it's such a gift.
No, it's very true, and there's... Yeah, as you said, there's stuff that we're always going to miss about Toronto and love about Toronto, but I'm already seeing sort of the different but fascinating sense of community that's here.
Yeah.
You know, much like British television, I'm seeing the same 20 people over and over again.
Speaking of Geeksgiving.
Yes.
There's not a shortage of geeks in Gambier.
There's a lot of nerds in this place. There's a lot. It's pretty astounding. So
I think we found our people.
We did. Well, I think this has been a successful 2015. Next time you hear from us, it'll still be 2015.
Yes.
But we will also be in the galaxy far, far away a long time ago.
Ooh.
So that's going to be it for us. I think... I should mention at the start, I mentioned my bizarre viral parenting, and I should make a note of that.
Oh, yes. Here. Should you tell your story?
So I've been using this bizarre metaphor for raising Amanda, which is that, you know, having a baby, you have this creature, and it's very intelligent. Like, it's babies are smart in their own strange alien way. So much so that I realized that having a child and raising it was like being a Starfleet officer and being assigned this alien ambassador from a new race, and you're just sort of there to keep it alive and sort of teach it how things work in this part of the universe. Like, you know, no, Madam Ambassador, gravity is quite lethal on our planet. Please, do not try to smother the dog with your love. I understand that... that omnivorous canines on your world are much more friendly. Here, they don't like having their snouts pinched. And this, so I posted this thing with a picture of Patrick Stewart, and it went crazy all over the place on Facebook. It's had so far over 1,000 shares.
We need to get picked up by George Takei if anyone has any links.
Yes, George Takei, if you're listening, or Brad, if you're listening.
I'm thankful for Parks and Recreation.
What? Where did that come from?
I don't know. Some strange.
Haven't we had Parks and Recreation for?
I know, but it's like Saga. I only discovered it this year.
Oh, was this the first year you actually like plowed through it?
Where were you this summer?
I couldn't.
Were you not in your parents' house as I was trying to lift my mind from the anxieties of wondering if this Kenyan job would work out? And so I just like plowed through 5 seasons of Parks and Recreation.
Well, I couldn't remember if you'd sort of like parsed it out before then and then just had like a giant race. Oh, okay. See, much like with Farscape, like it just feels like you've been obsessed with these things forever and ever. So, wow. Okay. So, yes, 2015 was the year of Parks and Recreation. And which is why you now have a...
Speaking of happy things.
It is a happy thing.
Things that, like, shows that don't have to be about meanness, but shows that can be about, like, people who actually love and support each other despite their differences.
Yes.
And kindness.
You're happy for kindness?
I am happy for kindness.
I got Rachel a Ron Swanson bust for
you
her
did.
Office.
It's currently propping up, I believe, my anti-Nicene fathers, and... No one has yet commented on it.
Well, that's because when you look at it, it looks like it could be some random just German philosopher.
I know. I just keep... It's because it's a first season Ron Swanson. So he's like in a tie.
It's the tie and the hair is a little weird.
Yeah. So it's not quite... Like you don't look at it and think Ron Swanson.
I look at it and I think it's my dad.
I have had at least one person recognize the Farscape picture.
Oh, that's good.
Of us.
That's sweet.
As John and Aaron in Farscape.
Oh, that's good. That makes me happy. That's a good litmus test.
Yes.
So it has been a remarkable year of strangeness and happiness and sadness and parting and new beginnings and all the rest. But we're excited. We're excited about the future and we're excited about Star Wars.
Yep.
So from the world of faith, family, and fandom, in no particular order, geek out, y'all.
Ticks to certain doom. Enemies encircle me. Confusion is nothing new. Plans were stolen from deep inside. Trench run, they come. Tie after tie.
Asteroids surrounding me. I may be in above my
720 to 1.
I can't hear what you said.
We
Taking him so long.
Armed and ready, Death Star attacks.
We learn that it's a trap.
You can run, you can hide, but they will find you. Tie after tie. If you falter, they'll blast you, they'll be waiting.
You falter, they'll blast.